supporting WHYY Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
Support for Voices in the Family is made possible in part by the generous support of Devereaux, the nation's largest nonprofit provider of behavioral health care for children, adolescents, and adults with developmental and intellectual disabilities, behavioral disorders, and mental illness. Devereaux operates at 15 centers in 11 states throughout the country.
I'm Nan Gottlieb. Thanks for listening to Voices in the Family. Today's adolescent girls are under extreme pressure to be perfect, more so than ever before, especially in a culture where we're constantly projecting an image to them of perfection on TV, the internet, and magazines. We know by nature girls are nurturers, but in this age of girl power, they're expected to also be beautiful, thin, sexy, as well as being highly competitive and overachievers. So what's causing this terrible increase in pressure? At what cost to the girls? And most important, what can be done about it? Joining me to discuss this are Dr. Stephen Henshaw. He's a professor and chair of the psychology department at UC Berkeley and author of The Triple Bind, Saving Our Teenage Girls from Today's Pressure. Stephen, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me on.
In a few minutes, we'll hear from Dr. Ronnie Cohen-Sandler. She's a clinical psychologist who specializes in the pressures facing girls and women. She's the author of Stressed Out Girls, Helping Them Thrive in the Age of Pressure. Later on in the show, we'll hear from Jan Figuera. She's the CEO of Girls Incorporated of Pennsylvania and New Jersey. And of course, we'd like to hear from you. Our number is 888-477-9499. If you are raising a teenage daughter or younger and you're concerned about what they are living with, give us a call. 888-477-9499. But before we begin, I'd like you to listen to something. Our producer, Gita Simons, talked to four Temple University students about what life was like for them when they were in high school.
What kind of pressures did you face in high school? Do you remember those times?
I mean, for me, it was always about academics because I come from a very strong, like, academic family. My parents were always about academics. I actually have three siblings who are at Georgetown now.
And how about balancing out that academic work at home with your social life, with other extracurriculars? How did you handle that?
Well, for me, it wasn't really that hard because I always worked, did track, and went to school. I guess it was just mostly because growing up, that's what my parents taught me, so that was the only thing I've ever known.
How did you deal with the pressure?
Well, my release was always track because I threw. So anytime I was, like, frustrated or overwhelmed, you know, track practice was the place for me to be because I could just throw that 8-pound ball as far as I could.
And how about you?
I was in a strong academic program. I was on the varsity swim team. I worked with the theater club. And then on top of that, I had schoolwork, and I worked as a volunteer in two of the offices within the school, giving tours, grading papers, and things like that. So there was a lot going on in high school, but I've always found that I work really well when I have a lot going on in my life, because if I have too much free time, I tend to squander it and not get as much done.
And when you girls were in high school, did you feel pressures to look a certain way or dress a certain way and do everything that you were doing at the same time?
Definitely. Like, always in high school, you know, girls always want to, like, impress the guys, the football players and everything like that. So people always made you feel like you needed to be conscious of what you were wearing. So if you wanted to wear sweatpants someday, expect to be, like, looked down upon. Like, you should always have your makeup on and your eyeliner on. And if you're not looking a certain way, then all the other girls are going to poke fun at you. So you just, it was like a dog-eat-dog world, like, especially within, like, the female spectrum. Like, girls can be, like, so mean sometimes. If you weren't, like, popular or knew someone who was popular, you're in for a tough ride.
And how about you?
I grew up right outside the city. There were, like, certain pressures to do drugs and, like everybody was always drinking on the weekends and everything. But I know my best friend, she fell into all of the pressures. Like she was always out drinking and she slept with like so many guys in high school. But so she really fell into like the pressure to like be cool and everything. But I could just kind of, you know, helped her out of her situations.
And how about you?
I saw the pressures with drugs and alcohol and sex all through high school, but I personally struggled because I am I have bipolar disorder, and all through school I was more struggling with, and I saw other people my age struggling with where they fit in. They didn't want to fit into the popular crowd or different groups, different cliques. But they wanted to know where they fit in because, like, it was really confusing trying to find out who were your friends or who was going to be there, because you were constantly seeing people hurting other people and not being there when that's all you wanted was somebody to be there for you.
How did you balance academics and figuring out where you fit in and still end up where you are?
I was constantly thinking about it. It was really difficult to balance academics. My parents really were a great support system, even though I wouldn't have admitted it then because I was always trying to, like, push against them. Writing was definitely an escape for me. I would definitely, like, say that any person at that age should have an escape of any sort, whether it be sports or music or anything, because my music and my writing was definitely my escape. Just to, like, release those emotions and, like, thoughts that I was constantly wondering about and all the confusion. But academics definitely was something that I had to, like, I had a really hard time concentrating on with all of that stuff in the back of my head.
Can you describe what that kind of feeling was?
I felt lost. I wanted to learn how to trust again.
Well, that was our producer, Gita Simons, who talked with four Temple University students about what life was like for them in high school. That's what we're talking about, what life is like for our adolescent girls. Dr. Stephen Hinshaw, I would just like off the top of your head to hear your reaction to hearing those girls.
Well, these girls sounded almost identical in terms of what they were talking about and the way they talked about it to the many girls we interviewed for the Triple Bind. And the thing off the top of my head was I was trying to calculate how many hours they had in their days, because it had to be more than 24 to do all the things they were doing. It's really not about having a good schedule of things to do. All the research shows that a schedule, a lot of activities, is actually preventive against substance abuse. It's helpful. But what you hear is the pressure to be perfect, to be a caregiver, to look a certain way. How do you make yourself over to have that very sexualized look and volunteer relentlessly and have straight A's and be on athletic teams? Those are the pressures that, despite this being the best time in history to be a teenage girl, just look at the successes girls and young women are having in our society, but the mental health statistics are showing us there's a darker side. One girl in four by the age of 19 in the United States will have developed a major depression, made a suicide attempt, cut herself, self-mutilation, self-harm, or exhibited binge eating or other forms of eating disorder. It's an unacceptably high level of serious mental health problems that are the flip side of the great successes that our young women are experiencing.
These are what you call the internalization disorder?
That's right, the internalizing cluster of symptoms and problems. You're turning some conflict against yourself through depression, active suicide, self-harm, binge eating. The so-called externalizing spectrum, acting out against someone else, aggressing. Also, intriguingly, since 1995, delinquency and aggression and externalization have gone down in boys in our country, but they've gone up by 30% in girls. So part of the reason here may be that with Title IX and this great access to athletics, girls from a young age are learning to use their bodies, and they're fighting back when they're getting maltreated or hit upon, and lots of blending of violence and sexualization in the rock videos and all the media that, that girls are experiencing.
Interesting. I'd like to hear Ronnie Cohen Sandler join in on this particular comment. Ronnie, you there?
Yes, I am.
I'd like to hear your thoughts about aggression in girls and what the underpinnings are.
Well, I agree with what he just said. And the other thing that you have to realize is that girls have sort of left boys in the dust in many, many ways academically. You know, we now see that they outnumber boys in terms of valedictorian, salutatorian. They're taking more AP classes. They're getting into better quality schools and at higher numbers than boys. But the problem is that the cost of that success. And what I'm hearing from girls when I travel around the country, they're talking about not only the internalization that he was talking about before in terms of the depression and anxiety and all kinds of issues about body image and eating disorders, but they're also talking about this sort of secret acting out that girls are doing, and they're talking about the drinking and the partying on the weekends and the risk-taking and the inappropriate social activity, which also has a very aggressive quality to it.
Ronnie, many years ago, the American Association of University Women published a seminal study showing that girls, when they hit puberty, their self-esteem goes down and tends to stay down. But it seems that things have gotten worse since that study was released, and that's nearly 15 years ago.
Yes. They talked about how girls lose their sense of self. They lose their voices. And unfortunately, I've been around a while, and I've seen the same deterioration, and it seems that we can't really stop that. And one of the things that I'm seeing, particularly among the most highly achieving girls, you know, there's so many girls today who believe that they have to be absolutely outstanding in every area. It's no longer okay, in their minds at least, you know, to be average girls who, you know, do well in school but not necessarily outstanding. You know, who play sports, and now they have to be the best, and they have to be in all the premier teams, and they have to be the lead in their school plays. And in their minds, they have to be absolutely perfect. And one of the things that's happened is that by focusing so much on these external emblems of success, you know, the high GPA, or where they go to college, or who they go to the prom with, and how they look, girls are really losing sight of who they are and what really makes them curious, and what they're interested in, and they're kind of going through the motions. And I see that kind of disparity between sort of the outside and the inside, that gap.
Well, I don't know if you heard the setup piece or not, but one of the girls said, I'm not going to recall her language, but one of the girls said she likes to keep busy because when she has downtime, the word in effect, she said, she wastes it. She wastes it, which kind of broke my heart to hear that, because you can't waste downtime.
Well, not only that, but they don't see the value of,
right.
I mean, I consider downtime critical. It's one of the things I always talk to parents about, that kids aren't being, quote, unproductive, that in fact is, for psychological reasons,
right.
So, so important that they have that time to reflect and to consolidate and to figure out who they are. But girls today believe that they're wasting their time if they're not accomplishing something, and there's something else. What they consider a waste of time or boredom actually can be very uncomfortable for them, because when they're not with their peers or they're not plugged in online, you know, so they're, quote, with their peers, at least, you know, electronically, virtually, and when they're with their own thoughts and feelings, they feel terrible because all of these anxieties come to the fore and they can't manage it.
We're talking about girls. We're talking about our girls, adolescents, our daughters, and the stresses they're living with and the impact of the stresses they're living with. Our number is 888-477-9499. If you've got a daughter you're concerned about, or if you are an adolescent or were very recently an adolescent, give us a call. We'd love to hear from you. That's 888-477-9499. Stephen, Ronnie used the word perfection, and I know that's a part of the triple bind you talked about. Girls have always been nurturing, and since the women's movement, there's always been a push to perform, to get into the workplace, to get, you know, a level playing field. But this perfection is relentless, and it's dangerous. Where did that come from?
Well, I wish I could put my finger on it, but I think you hit on the key points here. Even at age two, if you show toddlers films of people in distress, girls' heart rates slow down more than boys. They're more interested. They're more empathic. And, of course, we still raise our daughters to be the caregivers. At the same time, as Ronnie just pointed out, girls are showing unprecedented success, 57% of bachelor's degrees, exact parity now in med and law school admissions. We don't want to take that away, but that's a double bind. The triple bind is, though, I've got to do this all with effortlessness and ease. No one can see me sweat. I've got to do it maintaining a very sexualized look. And I don't really know who I am at the same time I'm trying to please everybody. One of the really sad things we heard with some of our interviews for the Triple Bind is that girls would say, well, what about talking in class in your high school courses? Well, we never speak in class. Wait a minute, you wouldn't speak up in discussion? Well, we get graded down if we don't have the right answer the first time. That, to me, is tragic. If I'm going to fulfill the main task of adolescence, which is to form an identity and know who I want to be, I've got to take risks. I've got to have downtime. I've got to fall on my face sometimes and not be perfect. But if the goal is to pad a resume and be relentlessly perfect all the time, there's not enough hours in a day to do it, and you lose sleep, and you don't really know who you are. You haven't formed a true identity. And I think Ronnie and I are agreeing that this is the real tragedy.
Definitely.
Of this great time of success for girls. And I'd be the last to advocate we want to take these opportunities away. But it's the media images that blur aggression and sexuality. One of the sad statistics in the triple bind, I'm not even talking about teenagers, recent national survey of third grade girls in the United States, 60% were worried about their weight. Over a third were actively dieting.
Mm-hmm.
This is a toxic culture
and
that is not promoting real identity.
Not only the psychology of it, what does that do to these girls' brain development? You know, if they are dieting in third grade.
Exactly.
Not a good scene,
yeah.
Both psychologically and literally physiologically, as you point out. And let's not forget that there are only 24 hours in a day. Recent research shows that sleep is important not just for helping us consolidate our long-term memories, but doing the basic task of regulating negative emotions.
Right.
And
right.
With less and less time for sleep, with the media on virtually 24/7, and the pressure to look and be a certain way, it's a physical and a psychological set of big problems
that's
for our teenagers.
We're going to have to take a break. That's a big issue, the sleep issue. Whenever I talk to adolescents, that's one of my first questions, is how many of you get enough sleep, and they laugh.
They laugh, exactly. When we get back, I'd love to say something about this sleep.
Okay. Well, we're going to take a 60-second break. We'll be right back. Our number is 888-477-9499. Our lines are filled. Please be patient. We will get to you. My guests are Dr. Ronnie Cohen-Sandler. She's a clinical psychologist, specializes in the pressures facing girls and women. She's written Stressed Out Girls, Helping Them Thrive in an Age of Pressure. I'm with Dr. Stephen Hinshaw. He's chair of the Department of Psychology at UC Berkeley, and he's written The Triple Bind, Our Teenage Girls and Today's Pressures. And later on, we'll hear from Jan Figuera. She's CEO of Girls Incorporated of Pennsylvania and New Jersey. Well, I'm Dan Gottlieb. You're listening to Voices in the Family. It's right here on WHYY-FM, Philadelphia.
Sponsoring a WHYY Corporate Challenge Grant makes good business sense. Consider this. Over 400,000 adults in the Delaware Valley spend time each week listening to their favorite WHYY programs, including Morning Edition, Fresh Air with Terry Gross, Car Talk, and All Things Considered. A corporate challenge puts your company in the spotlight as you lead the cause to support your public radio station and its award-winning local news coverage. To learn more, please call us at 215-928-2428.
All year long on Sound Opinions, we search for buried musical treasures. And each March, we travel to our biggest excavation site, the South by Southwest Music Festival in Austin, Texas.
I'm Jim DeRogatis.
And I'm Greg Kot. And this week on Sound Opinions, the world's only rock and roll talk show, Jim and I report back from South by Southwest with our findings on the next big thing in rock.
Tonight at 9 on WHYY.
We are back on Voices in the Family. I'm Dan Gottlieb, your host. We are talking about adolescent girls, our children, what they're living through, and it's not pretty. My guests are Dr. Stephen Hinshaw. He's chair of the Department of Psychology at UC Berkeley. He's written The Triple Bind, Saving Our Teenage Girls from Today's Pressures. I'm also joined by Dr. Ronnie Cohen-Sandler. She's a psychologist who specializes in issues of girls and women, and she's written Stressed Out Girls, Helping Them Thrive in an Age of Pressure. I want to go to the lines. Ronnie, I know I promised you we could talk about sleep, but we've got Amy on the line who's bringing up a very important issue.
Hello?
Amy, hi. You're on Voices.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I was an adolescent not too long ago who struggled with a lot of these issues and ended up being helped a lot by therapy and SSRIs for my anxiety, but I'm in graduate school now, and I guess my question is, my observation would be that this would be more of an upper middle class, sort of high SES issue for girls, not so much an issue across the board economically, and I didn't know if that is a true statement or what the contributors would say about that.
Amy, I want to ask you a question before we turn to our guests. I think it's a critical question. I'm glad you brought it up. But
sure.
Are you doing better now that you are post-adolescent? Are you feeling better about yourself?
Yes. I would say I'm doing much better. I would argue that I maybe am not as successful as I perhaps could have been scholastically once I did start taking medicine in college to sort of help relieve the anxiety and help me sleep and help me, you know, realize that getting straight A's was not the end-all and be-all.
And how do you feel about that?
Oh, so happy.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm in graduate school at Penn. Like, I'm doing well still. I'm not to say that I'm, you know, doing badly, but I feel as though I've enjoyed my life much more than I probably would have had I still been as stressed out as I was.
Yeah, good for you. Good for you.
Thank you.
All right, well, let's hear what our guests have to say. Are we talking about upper middle class?
Well, if I
here?
Could just start out for a second. All of the conditions we're talking about, both the internalizing and the externalizing, the self-harm and injury and depression and the acting out, actually the odds are greater that these occur the lower you go down the socioeconomic spectrum. So this is not simply an upper-middle-class white suburban phenomenon. However, upper-middle-class young women may feel the relentlessness of the pressure with Ivy League admissions or the top publics, et cetera, but everybody, especially now with the economic downturn, is feeling the pressure. How are we going to get jobs with the outsourcing? How do we look a certain way? It is true, though, that there are some socioeconomic groups and even ethnic groups that may be somewhat protected in the black community. There isn't this relentless pursuit of thinness, and so rates of eating disorders, at least in some recent studies, show they may not be as high in some African-American girls. But this is not solely an upper-middle-class phenomenon. Ronnie, you probably have a comment, too.
Yes, I agree with everything you said, and I just want to add to that a little bit, because when I did my interviews of girls, I was very fortunate to be able to get into some schools where they had a tremendous amount of diversity. And what I found was that the stresses may have been different a little bit with different socioeconomic groups. For example, with the very privileged kind of girls, having very, very successful parents made it a tremendous stress. Many of them had older siblings who went to Ivy League schools, and they felt pressure to live up to those high levels of achievement of their parents and siblings. Also, with the very privileged families, these families could afford to give their kids all kinds of opportunities. The sky was the limit. And so the mentality was, we're giving you all these opportunities, you should take advantage of them. And the girls were just overwhelmed. There was just no opportunity to kind of pick and choose and figure out who they were. With the middle and lower middle class families, what I found was, particularly when girls were given opportunities by their parents, they felt doubly responsible for sort of justifying their parents' hard work and sacrifices. So they felt even more pressure to get scholarships, to maintain their grades, to excel in sports and therefore try to get into college that way. So the pressures were different, and I didn't think that any socioeconomic group was really spared this kind of pressure.
I wonder about these numbers that you put out in the beginning, Stephen, these staggering numbers about 25% of girls will experience depression, an eating disorder, cutting themselves. Is that across all socioeconomic groups?
Yeah, it really does appear to be. And the thing that perhaps got me most tuned into this issue is that we've known for a long time that girls are relatively protected before the age of 10 or 11. They're more empathic, and they're more compliant, and they're more verbal, and so they don't get attention deficit or autism or aggressive problems the way that boys do. But once puberty hits, these very factors that used to be protective can be risk factors.
How so?
A very compliant, nurturing, empathic, verbal girl, if she sees her mother's distress or her friends in distress, is such a caregiver, she neglects her own self. So what used to be protective is now a risk factor. And so with development, with puberty, the things that were helpful before are not so much. But what is the real crux of the matter to me is that over the last 10 years, depression is starting ever earlier in girls. Mm. Rates of self-harm, even completed suicide, the last year for which we have data, 2004-05, girls 10 to 14, suicide rates were up 76%, whereas they'd held level in boys. So it's what we've known for a long time about adolescence being a risk period, but the toxic culture out there is pushing the genetic envelope, if you will, and the most at-risk girls are showing ever earlier and ever higher rates of these really serious problems.
Do these girls have any healthy role models?
Well, that's one of the issues that I'm really concerned with. For a long time, there were alternatives. It could be an athlete, could be a musician, could be somebody off the mainstream. But what we found in researching the triple bind is that a lot of the role models, even think of our top women tennis players, the Williams sisters are fashion designers and models, mm-hmm. Maria Sharapova with that certain look, Danica Patrick, the Indy 500 race car driver, poses in Playboy. There's a very sexualized way of being, a certain high standard of how you look for what used to be the alternative role models. A lot of these young women have been kind of co-opted. So it's hard to find a way off the treadmill or out of the rat race, and it's hard to find that unique identity.
Well, certainly.
And if you look in their own families, you know, the role model of their mothers, their closest, you know, role model, so many women that I've interviewed and spoken with today are feeling the same kind of pressure. Many of them are living vicariously through their daughters, but many of them feel the same kind of pressure to be everything and to be everyone, you know, they just feel the same need for perfection that their daughters feel. You know, sometimes when I'm talking to a group of students, girls in particular, and I'll ask, you know, when was the last time that you came home from school and you saw your mom, you know, sitting on the couch, you know, with her feet up, drinking a cup of tea or reading a book, and they laugh. They absolutely laugh because mothers are driving themselves crazy trying to be there and chauffeur their kids and make sure their kids are in the right schools and have the right teachers. And
well, that's my argument, and I think it's a powerful one and a critical one, that good parenting, good role modeling for a child is to do just that, is to read a book, put your foot up, have a cup of tea.
Mm-hmm.
And that's essential role modeling for
I
daughters.
Agree.
Let's go back to the phones. We've got Anna on the line.
Hello. I'm a mother of three daughters, and my youngest one is 18 and now a freshman in college. But, you know, she was a very grounded kid. She was the one who, you know, when her friend was cutting herself, took it upon herself to tell her mother and get her help. She was the one who told another mother that her son was suicidal and got him help. And then, you know, as time went on, I think all the pressures got to her, she started having anxiety attacks. And all I can say is it's really important for parents to be there, to be open to listening to their kids so that they will come to them when they have problems. Our kid was good enough to say, I need some help. you know, and ask us to find her a therapist, and it really did help her get through, you know, everything. And then she had a couple of other traumas where one of her friends was riding a bicycle and was killed by a driver. And if she hadn't had, you know, the support system she had, I don't know what would have happened to her. But,
it
makes me very, very happy that I had a good enough relationship with her that she was able to come to me when she was having these problems.
Well, Anna, you know, the research shows that aside from genetics, alienation from parents is the single biggest risk factor for kids developing depression. And what you said really underscores that, that if you have an open, honest relationship with your child, it really cuts down their risks substantially. I would imagine my experts would agree.
I'm just going to cut in and say that the research shows what we sort of all know, but it's true. Having mealtimes together is a protective factor. Avoiding the over-criticism, letting your kid be who your kid is. Now, that's not to say that you don't push toward doing well academically, athletically, or whatever the pursuit is, but I think what we want to avoid is the relentless pursuit and pressure to be perfect all the time, and not to A, have downtime, or B, make a mistake and try something new. As I mentioned before the break, the sad thing that we heard often from the girls we interviewed was, don't even talk in class, because if you don't have the right answer the first time, you get graded down for participation. If we want to prevent the triple bind in a lot of these mental health problems, and we want to promote self-discovery and a wider involvement with the community, you've got to have time to try things out, not be relentlessly perfect first time every time.
Well, we're in a minute, we're going to take a break, and I want to talk more about what we can do to change things, and there's a lot we can do to change things. We're going to bring on John Figuera, who's CEO of Girls Incorporated, and they're doing some wonderful programs. But before we do that, there's an important issue, and a couple people have called in on this. You know, Stephen, you talked about these girls being passive in school. I want to talk about the opposite, and that's bullying. As these problems develop with girls, bullying among girls has been increasingly, it's been more aggressive. I mean, we did a show on cyberbullying that just took my breath away with what these girls are doing to each other.
Right. One of the messages out there is that girls are still sexual objects. Boys and girls see these messages, but girls are more able to fight back now. It's modeled on all the media. Girls are more, obviously, through Title IX, able to participate in sports at equal rates. They're learning to use their bodies to protect themselves, but too often to attack other girls, often over boys, often over some of the more female relational aggression, reputation, damaging kinds of things. But girls are now using their fists and weapons at increasing rates, while boys' rates have actually declined over the last year. So it's not just the internalizing conditions, bullying, aggression, girl fights, I don't want to sensationalize it, but rates of aggression among girls and between girls and boys initiated by girls are going up too.
Yeah.
So the problem isn't just depression and self-harm.
Well, and you know, the last phrase in our setup piece was, you know, the words the girl used was about learning to trust again. And, you know, can't imagine living with in that environment and feeling safe. It's just heartbreaking. Well, like I said, when we're going to take a short break, and when we come back, we're going to talk about what we can do about it as parents and as a community. My guests are Dr. Stephen Hinshaw. He's chair of the Department of Psychology at UC Berkeley. He's written The Triple Bind, Saving Our Teenage Girls from Today's Pressure. Dr. Ronnie Cohen-Sandler is a psychologist and author of Stressed Out Girls, Helping Them Thrive in the Age of Pressure. And when we come back, we'll hear from John Figuera, CEO of Girls Incorporated of Pennsylvania and New Jersey. Well, I'm Dan Gottlieb. You're listening to Voices in the Family. It's right here on WHYY-FM, Philadelphia.
Join WHYY for a celebration of Native American culture, Friday, April 3rd, as we preview the highly anticipated PBS program, We Shall Remain. Spanning 300 years, We Shall Remain covers pivotal moments in U.S. history from the Native American perspective. Event highlights include a reception with foods inspired by Native American recipes and a performance by the Native Nations Dance Theater. For details or to RSVP, whyy.org/member experience.
National Public Radio has a growing audience and a history of great journalism, but in these terrible economic conditions, does it have a future?
This is the classic best of times and worst of times moment for NPR.
President and CEO Vivian Schiller on the future of NPR and journalism. That's next time on Tell Me More. This afternoon at 1 on WHYY.
We are back on Voices in the Family. I'm Dan Gottlieb, your host. We're talking about our adolescent girls, what's happening to them, what the culture, what the family is doing to them and for them, and most of all now, what can be done to help our children. We've been talking with Dr. Stephen Henshaw. He's chair of the Department of Psychology at UC Berkeley. He's written The Triple Bind, Saving Our Teenage Girls from Today's Pressures. Dr. Ronnie Cohen-Sandler has written, also a psychologist, has written Stressed Out Girls, Helping Them Thrive in the Age of Pressure. And as promised, we're joined here in the studio by Jan Figuera. She's CEO of Girls Incorporated of Pennsylvania and New Jersey. Jan, welcome to the show.
Thank you for inviting us.
So tell us about Girls Incorporated. What do you do?
It's a youth development agency that helps to inspire all girls to be strong, smart, and bold. And we do that through our education programs and advocacy.
So tell us about the girls you work with. How do they come to your agency?
Many of our girls are referred to us through the Department of Human Services. There's some self-referral from people who go to our website, and oftentimes there are school counselors and or other school administrators that will call us in to come work with girls at their schools.
Hmm. And I know you've got a lot of programs that that are involved in prevention.
Absolutely. Prevention is the key to what we're doing.
I wonder what the underpinnings of this, back to you, Stephen, and Ronnie, you know, a lot of these programs throughout the country have been about self-esteem and empowerment. Is that the underpinnings of what's going on with these girls?
Ronnie, why don't you take it first? I have some thoughts on this, too.
Sure. I believe that the self-esteem and the empowerment are a big part of things. And I've actually had, Dan, I just want to say, I've had quite a few dealings with Girls Inc. here in Connecticut where I practice. And it's been a fantastic organization. I've been involved with them with research. And I love what you do. And these programs are great. And the girls talk to me about how good they feel about being with other girls and talking about these issues in a very safe, kind of positive environment. And I think that they're most successful, though. I think it's a multi-pronged approach. I think that these programs are great, but I think we also have to get into the schools where a lot of this relational aggression is going on underneath the radar of the teachers. And I also think we have to address the parents, who I believe are a huge source of this pressure and are really going down the wrong alley when it comes to the messages that they're giving a lot of daughters.
Well, we're going to need to talk specifics about both of those, you know, schools and parents. Steve, what's your reaction about, you know, the original question about self-esteem and a sense of lack of power?
Yeah, I think empowerment is really the key here. Self-esteem is a bit tricky.
Mm-hmm.
If you have devastatingly low self-esteem, obviously that's terrible for every aspect of your life. But I think we should be wary of artificially raising self-esteem without a commensurate increase in actual skills.
Exactly.
So if, and there's been criticism actually in California where the state legislature 30 years ago had bills passed about raising the self-esteem of all the kids in the state. That's fine as far as it goes, but self-esteem has to be based on real skills, and it has to be based on a real identity. Sometimes what, I think more than sometimes now too, we see a lot of teenage girls doing is trying to bolster their self-esteem by looking a certain way, by desperately trying to please so many others with all these activities. But that's not real self-esteem in my book. That's a sort of frantic search for an identity and a sort of false empowerment. There's real problems out there.
And also affiliating with peers.
We've got to change the world, and we've got to get girls an opportunity to get outside themselves. And, Ronnie, go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you were... No, I just wanted to continue with what you were saying, this false sense of self-esteem that you're talking about. For so many teenage girls, it's about who they're affiliating with, who their friends are, who their boyfriends are, and feeling desirable by the opposite sex and what they have to do to achieve that.
I want to come back to you, Jan. You know, both, Stephen and Ronnie talk about the issue of empowerment, and underneath it all, there is a great deal of girls not feeling they have the power to step outside of the rat race, to develop their own identity, to say no to these unreasonable expectations. You've got programs on empowerment. What are they? How do they look?
We actually have 8 identity programs. We call them identity building programs. They range from getting girls to be interested in math, science, and technology. There is a program that encourages leadership development and starts with very young girls. All of our programs are research-based and age-appropriate. We have one specific program that deals with girls in the media and messages that the media gives you. So it looks at magazines and print media and television and actually getting girls to be able to discern these messages and how it impacts them, and then helps them to develop their own messages. So all of these things actually help to build skills as well as self-esteem. The girls are learning how to do something. They're learning how to clarify their values. They're learning how to negotiate. They're learning how to speak up for themselves. And with that, getting skill sets that will then not create false self-esteem, but real self-esteem.
Well, I just want to say, Jan, that's wonderful, because teaching some critical thinking, is this an advertisement or not? Do all girls and young women have to look that way? Teaching some critical thinking, as your programs do, about what those media images are out there is a real good way to build a real identity rather than some of these false identities. So that's I think, people ask, how do you get around this triple bind? Or this is a mental health concern in this era. What do we do? I think this teaching of critical thinking and building these skill sets is wonderful.
Yeah, we are not doing that at school. We are not doing that at home. And some research I've read shows that these kids are coming out of high school and college, and they are more self-absorbed and less skilled at problem solving. They're less resilient.
Right.
Jen, you've got a program on economic literacy, and I want to talk about the economy and what impact that's having on our girls and whether it's got a possible constructive outcome. But tell us about economic literacy and what makes that important.
Well, in today's time, it's really important for young women to be able to understand money and understand the impact of what they do is going to, and their decisions they make, are going to impact their future and their ability to be able to take care of themselves later on. One of the things in economic literacy, you learn about where money comes from and how to write a check and predatory lending. It's age appropriate. So the first set is called She's on the Money, and it's for little girls from 6 to 8. Mm. And so we do lots of interactive activities with them around money. But we even throw in a little career exploration at that time. By the time you get to high school, the module is called Futures and Options. And so it looks at the mortgage lending and the stock market and a bunch of other things. However, at this time, when you're looking at career exploration, you're also looking around decision-making capability. So do you go hang out tonight or do you study? do you have sex with this boy with unprotected, or do you make sure you take precautions or not become involved because having a baby may impact your ability to be able either to go to college or to get a job. And so these are the types of things that we're teaching girls so they can become good decision makers.
I've got to stop you right there because I can just hear listeners saying, well, okay, how can I get my kid involved in that program?
Well, we have our center-based programs at 1315 Walnut Street, and you can reach us on the internet or you can reach us by phone. There are 97 Girls Inc. affiliates across the country and 6 in Canada. We just happen to be the only one in Pennsylvania.
So how can they find you online?
We're at www.girlsinc.pa-nj.org.
You know, I want to turn back to you, Ronnie. You know, we talked about with Jan about economics. I wonder, we're talking about these affluent kids, upper middle class kids who are just being exposed to everything, having it handed to them. I wonder in today's economy if that's going to be cut back and if that could be a good thing in the long run.
I think it's going to be a great thing, and it's already happening. These are girls who actually have to make choices. They have to set priorities now. And what I've read about the research is that this is a particular group that is often feeling very aimless and is at great risk for being depressed. Many more girls who have this luxuries and very overindulged are among the most depressed kids because they also don't feel as if their parents really know them. They think that their parents see them as sort of symbolic. So now they have to start making choices. They see their parents having to make choices or cut back, and suddenly things get very real. And I'm seeing in my area a big improvement, actually. We've been, you know, I'm near New York in the financial industry, and I'm seeing a big improvement. Rather than kids feeling more anxious, they're actually feeling more grounded.
Yeah, my experience, Stephen, I'd like you to weigh in on this. My experience as a clinician is in my office, when adolescents begin to see their parents for the first time as vulnerable human beings, it's a bit scary and sobering, but it really opens the doors to intimacy and change, just shift things in the family.
Right. It's like, there's a chink in the armor. That's a source of high anxiety. On the other hand, it's real. Everybody's feeling it today, rather than a kind of sort of almost disembodied world of what could we think of now to avoid realities and look to the media or look for sort of false achievements and accomplishments. Now there's a job to be done, jobs, literal jobs to be found, problems to be solved in communities. Getting girls away from this kind of relentless mirror, which is one of the metaphors for the triple bind, sort of gazing in and looking for imperfections, real relationships, real choices, confrontation with an outside world that needs a lot of work done in it, may help us in ultimately get away from this tightly sealed, over-sexualized, over-pressured world that is creating serious mental health problems.
Yeah.
And it may, no one wants the worst of the downturn now, don't get me wrong, but it may confront us with a lot more being real with ourselves and our families and our kids than we've had to be for a while.
Hmm.
As an example, when parents have, you know, this downturn to think about or they're worried about the job, what I'm hearing from families is that instead of wondering, you know, which academic program to send their kids to so that they'll have a better chance of getting into an Ivy League school, now they're giving their kids the option of staying home and getting a job. And what's happening is that being out in the real world, as you said, Steve, you know, being out in the real world and going to a job where people expect you to show up and they value you and you're doing a job that makes you feel good and you're getting paid, that is the skill that's helping these kids to feel the self-esteem as opposed to going to a program and, you know, getting a few more A's.
You know, I love what happens in Israel, where kids, when they finish high school, automatically, in this case, go into the military. I'm not so sure I'm thrilled with that, but they have to do a year of service. That's
right.
Just automatically, and I'm not so sure A lot of kids certainly aren't ready developmentally to go to college anyway, but it, you know, that's a time when you see there's a bigger world out there and you have a responsibility to care for it. I think it's, you know, a big strike for mental health. I'd love to do it in this country if we ever could.
And if you speak to these Israeli kids, which I've done, you know, these 18, 19, 20-year-old kids, you don't hear the self-absorption that you hear in this country. Their sense of the larger world and of their country and patriotism is so strong. They're remarkable kids.
Well, you know, years ago, Martin Seligman, who's here at mm-hmm. University of Pennsylvania, he talks about the value of external stressors and mental health. Mm-hmm. That when there are external stressors, we tend to band together, become less absorbed, and mental health improves. And that when we don't have any, we become self-absorbed.
I just want to comment, too, that even with this show, a very fundamental thing we have to do is acknowledge the darker side of girls' successes, that there are mental health problems and risks. I grew up in a family with very serious mental illness. My father was away for periods of time, even up to a year in length, when my sister and I were in grade school. The doctors told my parents, never tell your children about mental illness. They can't understand. So there was a pledge of silence. My dad was in mental hospitals at the time. Ended up he had bipolar disorder. I helped to diagnose him. Once he started to open up to me, went against medical advice once I left for college. But by acknowledging there are problems, we can do something about
that's
them.
That's right.
Too much mental health issues are shameful and silent. We've got to.
And we can acknowledge them at every level, whether they're mental health issues, social issues, whatever the issues. I want to thank all three of you so much for joining us today. I think it's been a great show and an important one. My guests have been Dr. Stephen Hinshaw. He's chair of the Department of Psychology at UC Berkeley. He's the author of The Triple Bind. I was also joined by Dr. Ronnie Cohen Sandler, a psychologist who wrote Stressed Out Girls, Helping Them Thrive in an Age of Pressure, and Jan Figuera. She's CEO of Girls Incorporated, and you can read more about them at girlsinc.org. Next week on Voices in the Family, we're going to be doing a similar show, but about boys. You can reach us at voices@whyy.org or reach me at drdangottlieb.com. The engineer for today's show has been Kevin Griffin. Elizabeth Perez Luna is our executive producer for radio content. Our executive producers, Mike and Scott. Voices in the Family is produced by Gita Simons. Elisa Walters is our associate producer. Our intern is Jonathan Glick, and I'm Dan Gottlieb, your host. Have a good week, my friends.